everyone. Welcome to the Mental Health Mukbang, where we make mental health easily digestible. I am Christopher Vo. I'm a therapist from Houston, Texas. I know I was MIA last week, but I'm back. And today I've got street tacos.
Cool. Jeannie Chang here at LMFT in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm eating songpyeon Korean rice cakes with sweetness in the middle. It's in honor of Chuseok, which is the Korean Thanksgiving. It's my favorite thing to eat over pizza, whatever. And I said pizza because that's the American thing.
But... So Jeannie is a sweets person.
Feel good.
My name is Jenny Wang. I'm a clinical psychologist from Houston, Texas. I am eating a Trader Joe's granola bar. It's called Raises the Bar. A bunch of ancient grains and chocolate chips. And happy mid-autumn festival to anyone celebrating. Mm-hmm.
You're always so healthy compared to us.
I know. I was like, seriously.
Why is Jenny so healthy?
Mm-hmm. All right. My name's Jed Chun, therapist based out of LA, and I've got a braised pork belly bento box thing.
Nice.
Wow.
So seeing how I missed last week, what are we talking about this week?
Anxiety.
Anxiety. Continued. Apparently there's a lot of stuff to talk about when it comes to anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to kind of talk about school anxiety in particular, right?
Continuing especially off last week, yeah.
It's definitely relevant.
Mm-hmm.
What was school anxiety like for you guys, you know, growing up through undergrad or post-grad?
I was never stressed. No, kidding. Kidding, just making sure that was clear. School anxiety? Yeah, I think that is a big part of... Isn't that most of the anxiety? No, I think that was most of my anxiety, probably. I think that was like the focal point, and then everything else, it's like a ripple effect. So if you're anxious about this one thing, I couldn't share about my stress with how stressful it was with doing well in school and whatever, or even when I felt like I was struggling. So I think that's a big one, but as I was talking about this, I just remembered another one. I played the piano. That is probably, I don't really want to play the piano today, even though I do love it, is I had a lot of performance anxiety, like just, and I could never tell my parents, even though I think they would understand me being stressed out to perform. But you know, when you hold it in and you're so stressed that I just remember throwing up because I was so stressed out. So anxiety also has that physical reaction, right? You know, stomach aches, headaches, vomiting, which was for me. So yeah, I mean, I recall, so school performance, I think that all relates. That's a big part of my stress growing up, for sure.
Yeah.
And actually,
for me, I didn't really notice like the physical symptoms or even disruption in my cognition. But the night before, I would always have really just a difficult time sleeping. And with that comes, you know, limited performance the next day. That was my big thing.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of somatic symptoms, I don't feel like we covered that in depth in last week's episode. And I just wanted to bring that up because somatic symptoms are actually more common in Asian cultures than they are in their Western counterparts. And I think that's something that's really important to...
For viewers that don't know.
Yeah, for viewers that don't know, right? So I think that's actually a really important thing that we should cover, given that this is an Asian-focused mental health podcast, right? It would make a lot of sense for us to kind of get into that for a second. So for some of you, how do you feel like that might influence the way that we engage with mental health services or how we engage in maybe self-care or how we manage our anxiety or even notice our anxiety, right?
Yeah, that's a big good point. I just feel like I just talk, so let's have somebody else talk.
But just to clarify, when you say somatic symptoms, you mean that Asians in general don't have we don't examine anxiety in terms of like the mental processes. We view it in terms of like the physical symptoms, right? So like we were talking about when it comes to feeling ill, butterflies in your stomach, feeling nauseous, right? We have all these different terms for it.
But we focus on the physical symptoms, but we still aren't linking it. When I say traditionally Asian culture will just say, oh, I have a stomach ache or my heart's pounding. I think I'm having a heart attack, but they won't say I'm anxious, right? Yeah. It's still kind of like the physical part. What's wrong with me? Something's wrong with my heart. I say that because I can think of quite a bit of, I called them patients back then when I was working primary care, would literally think they're having a heart attack when the doctor's like, well, I did every test on you. I did every echocardiogram and you are fine. We did a stress test twice. There is nothing. Yeah. However, I believe you're anxious, you know? And it's hard for the doctor to even say that to their patients, by the way. Yeah. And yes, this was a South Asian woman. So she just came in thinking I'm dying and she's 34, but I don't think it really hit her till she came to therapy that it was anxiety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that can be so detrimental, right? I've witnessed that a few times where people thought that they were, you know, dying or having a heart attack, but they weren't. It was a panic attack, right? And I've also have someone, I won't name who, but someone close to me in my family. And for years, maybe 3 years, they were battling anxiety, but they only felt, or they could only recognize the somatic symptoms, which were having trouble eating, right? Reduced appetite. And when they would eat, they would get like diarrhea, things like that, right? Just upset stomach. And they would get endoscopies, colonoscopies, go doctor after doctor after doctor, going to the point where then they started to seek alternative medicine. And some of the alternative medicine was not legitimate, right? Like there's some medicines that we can argue, like Chinese medicine, but then one doctor was like, take a picture of your pupils and send it to me and I'll tell you exactly what disorder you have, right? Because they were so desperate to find a cure for this. And what did it end up being? It ended up being anxiety in regards to being alone in the house because they were dealing with empty nest syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. And that comes from not being able to recognize and not talking about emotions and, you know, psychology in general growing up.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that what y'all have all said is that because there's a dichotomy between mind and body, right? That inability to integrate symptoms with psychological distress, even having the language for it, right? I think a lot of like, you know, I think of the older generation where it's just like, oh, my muscles hurt and my stomach hurts and I have rashes randomly, you know? And like, there are these physical symptoms that I think you would take a lot of convincing to be like, this is actually, the cause is more psychologically based, right?
Right.
Every time you get financially stressed, you break out in hives, but you just don't realize there's that link. Yeah. And so I think, Jed, you were asking like, how do we know, right? Like, how can we know that we're anxious? Or what do we do about it? And I know for myself, if I don't run consistently, my anxiety ramps up. And so that is one way that you can physiologically discharge, right, that anxious energy. Because when we think about it, right, when you're anxious in your body, stress hormones are going up, cortisol is going up, and basically your body is mobilizing you for fight or flight, right? And when you don't do anything then all of those very toxic kind of like hormones build up in your body and start to deteriorate and cause inflammation and right, hurt your blood vessels, all that stuff. And so one way for maintenance is to move your body consistently if you can. Yeah. Not just for the physical, but also for the mental benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally, that's why exercise should never be underrated, right? And it doesn't have to be. I think sometimes clients will think when I say exercise, they're like, well, they think I mean like run 5K. I'm like, no, it could be a fast walk for like, they say 30 minutes, you know, I go and in that fast walk, listen to your favorite podcast or something, but it doesn't have to look fancy, right? It's just about really being grounded. I was actually going to, I forgot something about somatic symptoms. This is a really good topic. I realized when I was younger and it's better now, but I think it's just biological for me. I used to, when I was stressed, it would come out in eczema. Eczema is very common in Asian, I feel like with Asian skin, with just like rashes, right? We were talking about that. But I remember it flaring up because you're got that nervousness, right? That nervous tick, and I would itch it specifically on my hands, which made it even more, I guess, difficult because when you're practicing the piano or playing the piano and you could see your hands, And so I think that's just what happened. My hands became the focus of stress. So I would sit there scratching it. I don't have any more, but I think I just outgrew it. That doesn't mean I'm not anxious, but definitely it somatically for me, I was like, wow, obviously I'm super stressed out because I keep itching and eczema really flares up badly. Like right. You keep itching and then it turns into like bumps, right? So it did manifest like that for me as well. So it's pretty powerful, right?
Sure.
That mind with the body.
You also run into the danger of coping mechanisms like, you know, scratching yourself. Sometimes it's the eczema, but sometimes you also have rarer disorders like trichotillomania, you know, pica, things like that. But even in general, the danger of positively reinforcing anxiety, right? I run into that a lot with my clients. I work with veterans, right? And when veterans come back, you know, and they want to go somewhere that they used to go to regularly, like the mall, right? They have a hard time shutting off and stop being hypervigilant. And what is the mall? It's a wide open space, right? Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by people and their brains flaring up going, there's danger all around me. I have to assess for shooters and things like that. So they go into the mall and it's overwhelming. And what do? They go, you know what? This is overwhelming. My anxiety is flaring up. I'm going to go home. Right? And I will deal with this at another time. Then the next time they decide to go to the mall, before they even enter the mall, they see the entrance. They go, you know what? My anxiety is flaring up. I'm going to go ahead and turn around and go home. Then the next time, before they even hit the exit to the Galleria, right? To the mall, you know, their anxiety starts to flare. It flares up faster and harder because your brain's going, there's danger in front of me, right? It's perceived, imagined danger. And your body wants to turn and run away from it. What you need to do is expose yourself to that, right? But you also have to make that mental, you know, connection. Because I had another client who was having anxiety in regards to a marriage, right? And because they had been together for so long, he felt like he shouldn't have any anxiety regarding to that. His brain ended up making the neural connection and connected it to driving. So when every time he would step foot into a car, because that was the first time he felt the anxiety, because that was the first time they went to go look at wedding dresses, right? His brain made that connection and went, I guess this is what I'm anxious about. And every time he stepped into a car, he got really anxious until we did some work. And I said, hey, are you having some thoughts in regards to the marriage? And the second he was able to make that neural connection and understand it, his anxiety started to dissipate. Fascinating what the brain can do.
Yes. And, you know, you think about like neuroscience, right? And neuroplasticity, this idea that you can rewire your brain every time something makes you anxious, makes you fearful, and you avoid it, right? You decide, I'm not going to even get close to it. It wires the brain to think there is actually threat there when there isn't. Mm-hmm. Right. And it also continues to drive that association. Now that place, right, is scary. Now it's generalizing to a whole area of space and now a whole city and da da da. And so you are literally rewiring your brain every time you go down that pathway and your mind tricks you into thinking this is a threat. Yeah. It just lays the neural foundations for that. And so exposure, like you said, rewires the brain literally by creating new pathways.
So the hope is that we can continue to retrain and train our brain constantly. That's why mindfulness practice is powerful, right? I always encourage people saying, yes, you've had this happen to you, but neuroplasticity, you can rewire it. They said you can train your brain till death without, you know, without being morbid, you know what I mean? And keep doing that. It just takes work. But once, you understand the concept of mindfulness and buy into it. I always talk about buying into it. Then you see the value of that. You can do that, right? So mindfulness is big. I mean, I talk a lot about that, but I love that word, neuroplasticity, that you can, it's like that. It already gives you that image that it can be like, what's the word?
Molded.
Movable.
Shaped. Malleable.
Yeah, shaped and molded. Yeah. Remolded. Yeah. Like Play-Doh or something.
You know, so bringing it back real quick, right? How is all of this, how can we relate all of this back to school? Because that is technically our topic for today. Continuing on our conversation last week, right? How does this all play out in do we want to be really specific? Do we want to say, like, specifically how people experience it in school and what that looks like? Or how we can use what we've just talked about to help manage some of the anxiety that comes with school? Or become aware of it?
I mean, I think it's valuable to talk about how we experienced it in our lives, right? In school, in work, that was, you know, the two biggest topics that we get asked about. And how we overcame it, right? What worked for us? Because what works for other people is not necessarily going to work for them. But I want to at least give people ideas of what we did to manage these things, right?
So I was going to say something interesting. I'm not disagreeing with Chris getting the right names now because Chris is here. No offense to Jed. I would not say overcome. I tend to use the word like manage anxiety because it's not something that necessarily goes away. We get good at, we know that it's there because it's, I feel like it's a stress reaction, normal part of life, right? There's anxiety, but I watch my words sometimes with clients because they're thinking that they can overcome it. And then bam, they're hit with something back at square one. So I call about constantly managing it to the point that sometimes you're not anxious because you've managed it well, depending on the situation. So with me, with school, I think one of the things I do talk about with school is first accepting the fact that it's okay to be anxious about school. Because I do work with a lot of students. So I'm always like, well, I kind of get why you'd be anxious. They're like, what? I go, because you're in the middle of midterm. So wouldn't you be anxious? Right? You're about to pull an all-nighter. Chris, you know, talked about sleep and yeah, you pulled an all-nighter three times this week. I would say that heightens your anxiety, first of all, because of lack of sleep. And then second of all, you're anxious because, so sometimes I say anxiety is good, right? Why are you anxious about school? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, no, why are you anxious? And then they'll say, well, I want to do well. I'm like, exactly. So anxiety can also drive you, right? That's why you're feeling anxious, because I wouldn't say it's positive, but it's more just a shift in, it's like reframing it that is why you're feeling this way. No, everybody wants to do well, right? Or you want to do well and you work hard for it. And that's why it's there. So I kind of start there, being the fact that it's almost like saying, hey, it's okay to feel anxious. It just doesn't feel great, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to feel anxious, but accepting that is big thing. Jenny was saying that. So I say, don't resist it. It's going to persist. That would be one step, just saying, hey, it's okay to feel that way.
And I think it depends on, like, I guess where your anxiety falls in the school process, I guess. Like, are you anxious because you procrastinated for 2 months and now you need to write your paper? Or are you anxious because, right, you aren't great at this subject and so you might need to recruit help, right? Find people to study with. Like, I think it's hard to necessarily give a blanket statement about how to manage the anxiety when it's different in circumstances for every person, you know? I know for myself, I don't tend to be a very anxious test taker or even a student, but I know that how I've compensated, and I think maybe that's why it manages the anxiety, is I study like regularly, right? I remember being in college and like, it would be, you know, midterms in a month. I'm like, okay, time to start studying, right? And I would just go and study like an hour each day or like a half hour each day. And it was just that repetition exposure. And by the time the test came, like I generally knew the material. So I think that's how I compensated with it. But I know there are a lot of people who don't function that way and they're studying the night before. So I think for some people, some compensatory strategies work and mitigate some of that anxiety. And it's almost like figuring out where your balance is, you know, and where is your sweet spot.
Good point. I'm impressed that you did that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I was a procrastinator, but definitely I kind of waited till like 3 days before.
I was a before the test kind of.
Yeah. And I would say generally when I hear college students have an all-nighters, I'd be like, yeah, but I don't think I actually really pulled an all-nighter. Did you, Jenny? I wasn't quite like Jenny, like a month before. I definitely planned a little bit ahead, but I couldn't pull an all-nighter. I just couldn't function like that. Okay. So I needed to sleep. So that was my anxiety. I have to sleep, you know, to manage that stress.
Yeah.
Jeff, Jed is just eating away. I'm just watching you eat.
I'm hungry.
I'm kind of jealous.
Did you run out of food already? One of us has to be eating. This is a mukbang.
I am eating.
I finished my granola bar.
Yeah, I have three left. I'm saving it.
Yeah, I went through three tacos. I was starving. When you talk about the reframe with anxiety, what the term that I typically use is utilize my anxiety, right? Because anxiety's purpose has a purpose, and anxiety is useful for me. So the way that I look at my anxiety is trying to tell me something, right? And my anxiety is trying to tell me that I want to experience more of this, or these are my weak points. So I need to shore myself up with this, right? And growing up, you know, I was a completely different person from who I am now. I think a lot of people now feel as if I am an extrovert or I'm confident in these different things, but I used to be a very socially anxious, introverted person. And I overcame that by utilizing my anxiety. And what I would do is I would challenge it, right? I would say, well, I am introverted because I don't know these different things. So how can I do that? And what I did was I would do one new thing every week. I would do one new thing every month. And then I would do one new thing every 4 months. And they would be in escalating fashion, right? So at first it started out very small, something that I knew could be manageable, but something that was still new for me. So it was, I'm going to go into this restaurant, look at the menu, and if I don't like it, I'll turn around, right? Mm. Or I'm going to go and eat by myself, or I'm going to go watch a movie by myself, right? And then it turned into these other things. I'm going to go to this party, right? You know, by myself or without asking other people or not caring if other people are going to be there, right? I'm going to approach this person and not care about the results afterwards. And it helped me develop those skills because sometimes I would fail, but I recognized that failing didn't really mean a whole lot. It just meant that I learned from it. And every time that I did fail, I would fail better. But the most of the time I didn't fail. That was just my anxiety telling me I was going to fail, right? Hmm.
So how for somebody who's like trying to, right, like fail well, right? Trying to like be brave, essentially, be courageous and trying that. How do they get over that fear that feels like it is debilitating? It is, right? It's a wall that they cannot fight through. What would you suggest for those people?
What I typically say is that my job as a therapist in certain situations is to remind you that you do have this end game goal, right? So that you don't become complacent. But my job is also to remind you that you've come so far and you've made so much progress, right? So you don't feel overwhelmed by that goal. And a lot of times when you're talking about that, it's because they look at the expectation of the outcome and go, I can never see myself being that person. Right? And I'm saying make your goals smaller. Make them as small as possible, as manageable as possible. Keep breaking them down. Do you remember that activity you did in grade school? I don't know if you guys did, where teachers were like, write down directions for this person to make a peanut butter jelly sandwich, right? And you wrote it down and they're like, well, you didn't write down to open the bag of bread. You didn't say to pull out the jar of peanut butter. You made all of these assumptions. I say make your goals the exact same manner. Break them down into the smallest possible piece. When even if your goal, for example, is I need to work out, right? I need to work out 5 times a week and lose 20 pounds. Well, okay, well, let's break that down. You need to lose 10 pounds. Then you need to lose 5 pounds. Then you need to lose 1 pound. But before that, you need to go to the gym, right? You need to go to the gym 3 times a week. Well, before that, you need to go once a week. Before that, you need to get a gym membership. Before that, you need to research gym memberships. Before that, you need to even think or contemplate, right? Pre-contemplative and contemplative stage about what direction you would take or what you would do, right? All of those tiny steps are successes toward your future goal.
Yeah, I like what you said. It's almost like SMART goals, right? They have to be measurable. We tend to go for the big one, and then that's what overwhelms us too, because they have to be realistic. I always say small change can lead to big change. So one small tweak can make a big difference later. So I'm just reiterating that. I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we explored in, I think, the first episode that we talked on anxiety about, right? Mm-hmm. Taking these nebulous ideas and then making them smaller and making them more manageable.
Yeah.
And so I guess if we're going to be specific about how this applies to each student, right? It's going to look different, like Jenny said, for everyone, because everybody has a different part of school that they have difficulty with, right? There are so many different aspects and facets to school that somebody can experience anxiety in one, and it can affect their anxiety, it can affect their performance or their situation in another, right? So say that you're preoccupied with your grades. That will negatively impact your social well-being, generally, right? If you're going to plan on studying X amount of time during the week, right? If you've got 7 classes and you're studying an hour each day for each of those classes, right? You're not going to have time to engage in any meaningful social activity because it's class, study, sleep. That's really all you have time for. And so that may cause anxiety in another area, or it may negatively impact another area or domain of your functioning, right? Same thing with social anxiety, right? If you have a lot of social anxiety, that might carry over into your ability to be able to participate in class, which then negatively affects your grades. And so there are a lot of different aspects of how anxiety can affect you. It really comes down to isolating which one you are feeling the most emotion towards or are being the most affected by, right? So for, say, people who like, okay, so I'm gonna use myself as an example, right? Not in terms of like specifically how I was feeling, but how I managed during college, right? So generally for me, that looked like because I have like a low threshold for anxiety, right? So I generally didn't worry about a whole lot. I spent a lot of time engaging in social activities or just doing random things.
You have a high threshold, me.
Yeah, I mean, I have a high threshold for anxiety. So I know that these things need to get done, right? And I am confident enough in my ability to get them done. But the issue is, in that moment, right, I know that over time, I recognized that it was unsustainable, because you can literally see my GPA rise over the course of, it's more like, it looks kind of like this. My GPA looks like this. And it comes with the realization of like, hey, you know, like this isn't sustainable because I'm really training myself to be avoidant of these highly stressful times, which tend to be midterm weeks and final weeks, because I wasn't doing what I needed to do throughout the quarter, right? And so as I realized that for myself and started to take a little bit more proactive measures and or taking easier classes, that in order to get to where I wanted to be, right, if I wanted to graduate with a 3.0 GPA, then I needed to take these steps in order to get there. And that meant recognizing what it was that was causing me to stress, right, and then dealing with it in an effective way. So even though I still didn't feel that immediate stress throughout wherever, there was enough of it to bring out some of that stress, to the helpful anxiety, right, to bring it out, to be like, hey, I need to be thinking about this so that I can avoid having to destroy myself at the end of this quarter. And so it is that kind of management of, I mean, how, like, it really just comes down to what it is that you are dealing with that is stressing you out. So recognizing it, right, and then taking the small steps that it takes to get there. And that looks different for everyone, right? For someone, it might be like their internship. It might be like social anxiety, like Chris said, right? Wherever it is that you are in school, and wherever, like, regardless of whether you're in college or high school or graduate school or whatever, like the struggles are similar, right? At the end of the day, you're thinking about your grades, you're thinking about your interactions, and all of those things will play a part into how you're experiencing stress. So breaking it down into whatever category it fits and seeing how it plays a role in your life may be a helpful place to start, so that you don't feel so overwhelmed by everything once it all comes crashing together, right? If you have a million obligations for your club, and you have finals, and you have like you're graduating soon and you're looking for an internship, and all these things are crashing together at once, right? You don't want to have to wait until that critical junction to recognize that, hey, I might not have been dealing with my stress appropriately or anxiety appropriately through this period. And how can we start to take a look at those small cues that can give away the fact that we're feeling anxious? And we've talked about a lot of those cues already, right? But I am getting kind of ranty.
I like how you remember everything about your GPA. I'm like, what was my GPA? I was going to say one thing. Also, don't forget, especially when you're in school with a collective group, lots of students around, anxiety can spread. So I always tell students, you know, it's contagious, right? So if you're around somebody and maybe you weren't even that anxious about the paper, but then someone else is anxious, you're like, oh, I should be anxious. Or there's a reaction because you're feeding off of each other, and school can do that, especially campuses. So I always say, be aware whether or not that whatever you're experiencing, is it your anxiety? Were you even anxious about this? Or is it because somebody else said it and then you're like, oh, I should be anxious? I think it's important to know, first examine yourself, right? What are you? Maybe you're not. And it's just because somebody else brought up a paper and they're stressed out and you're like, why am I not stressed? I'm thinking maybe Jed. If Jed was around me, I'd be stressed about something. Jed's like, why is Jeannie stressed out? But I think a lot of that feeds off each other. So I'm always like, just know that it can spread. So you have to really just figure out where you're at, right? Just making sure what are you really anxious about? Is it that? Maybe it's not.
And I do want to make a comment.
What are you going to say?
I want to apologize for all the people that I stressed out, because I wasn't stressed out. They were more stressed out. You know, it's like, wait, why am I stressing out if that guy's not stressed out, right? And then they stress out about being stressed out. I actually had a few conversations with people in my past.
It's like the underfunctioner, right?
Yeah. So they're no like, offense. Your lack of stress stressed me out more. And I was like, what? So,
well, because, you know, don't forget, then they're also overfunctioning. So I don't know if that's necessarily the case in your defense.
Well,
anyways.
There's a really important topic to bring into when it comes to anxiety is the expectation. Right? Don't live off of someone else's expectation. And that kind of ties us back to school and family expectations, right? Coming from us who have been through school, time is your most valuable resource, right? So often we get caught up in our expectations from our family, from our peers, from whatever sources to succeed and succeed on a specific timeline in a specific manner, that we end up rushing things, right? And making it worse on us. And that just compounds the anxiety of failure when we could have just slowed down in the first place.
How do we do that? Right? Mm-hmm. How do we untangle from expectations from other people? Right? How do we, my parents are paying for college. So they want certain grades. What do I do about that? Right? Because I think a lot of these college, or I'm assuming college students, you can't just be like, I'm cutting you out of my life because you're not healthy for me. You're causing me anxiety. Right. So how do you navigate that when people are paying for your education? People are expecting certain grades or certain standards by which you need to now consider, at least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think for some parents, it's the critical thinking aspect of, I can take four classes like you wanted me to and do poorly in all four, or I can take three and ace them. What solution would you prefer? Right? That works for some people. For some parents, that still doesn't work with them, right? I think with some people, it's also understanding that sometimes you can look at other solutions too, right? Like where you said, you know, my parents are paying for school. What else can I possibly do? I'm living with my parents. What else can I possibly do? I'm not advocating for cutting ties, right? But sometimes understanding that there are other solutions if it comes down to that, right? People do take out loans. People do work and go to school at the same time. These things are possible. It might take you a little bit longer, but again, would you rather succeed the right way or fail and have to do it twice, right? Mm. And have all these other issues that come with something like that.
Yeah, that's very, very multi-dimensional question, Jenny. But I was, from an angle of a parent, I do try to tell parents, or help students understand the parents, not to defend parents. Right. What's going on with your own parents' anxiety?
Yeah.
It always boils down to, I'd like the word introspection. So I say to the students, hey, can you analyze your parents? Can you imagine what they're stressed about? Oh, my parents never went to college, or the fact that they can afford this for me, that's the pressure. I'm like, great. So I need you to look at that and then figure out a way, like Chris said, to word it the best way.
Sure.
I appreciate this. I'll take 3 classes and get straight A's, which you're right. They'll probably appreciate then 4 classes and B's, right? Or C's. Yeah. But yeah, like that's a lot of what I do with parents going, why is this so important? Like what's stressing you out? And they're like, I'm not stressed out. I'm like, I think you are, you know, holding them accountable.
I like the way you put that. You know, I talk about how you always have to craft the message to the receiver, right? So if you're busy crafting an argument in your head and you don't know what makes that other person tick, you're just, you know, shooting blanks. Like you have no idea what you're aiming at that point, right? But if you understand exactly what your parents' expectations are and why they have those anxieties and why they have those expectations, you can hopefully craft a better, you know, rebuttal.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a great topic to cover in the future, like communication and how we can really figure out how to have effective conversations.
Yeah. Which is a very long topic too.
That could be next time.
Yeah.
But
next time we did ask the community questions, right? Mm-hmm. So for our next episode, I definitely wanted to get to some of those questions and answer, you know, the community directly, right? Give them some feedback.
Yeah, so let's do that. I think we've covered a lot of what we wanted to for now. Mm-hmm. And so next episode we'll be answering questions like Chris said, and perhaps giving you specific when you ask a specific scenario that we can answer that specifically. So we'll do that next week.
Yeah. And I think that might happen more regularly, right? Maybe like once a quarter or maybe like once a month or something, where we have, where we take more questions from the community and kind of integrate that into how we're managing. In any case, we appreciate everybody joining us this week. We will resume speaking about anxiety after next week. Because it's such a big topic and I feel like we could literally talk for years about it. But in any case, we're going to wrap it up here for this week. Thank you for joining us. And, we hope to see you next week for some Q&A. And then, we'll be back to anxiety the week after. All right?
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Bye.